We get things underway in this 5 o'clock hour by welcoming back to the program Pete Abraham, who covers the Boston Red Sox for the Boston Globe. Pete, good afternoon.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
I'm well. Taking time from your vacation to be with us, I appreciate that.
No problem. I'm going away tomorrow, but I got time tonight. Absolutely.
Well, good. Well, let's talk about what's going on with the Red Sox. A few things done here in the offseason, but still that big question mark over the bullpen. Is this waiting game going to pay off for Dave Dombrowski?
Well, I think so. It reminds me a lot of what happened last year with J.D. Martinez, that it made the Red Sox to sign J.D. Martinez. It made sense for him to go to the Red Sox. But they didn't move too quickly and give him too much money. They got what amounted to a reasonable deal. He got the opt-outs in that contract that he wanted, and it worked out obviously very well. They won the World Series, and he was a terrific player. I think it's going to be similar this year with what they do with the bullpen. Whether it's Craig Kimbrell or somebody else, I think they're going to wait and let the market develop a little bit more and then see where Kimbrell is at maybe 10 days from now and see if there's a deal to be made there. I suspect it would be a lot more economical than it would have been if they had tried to do it a month ago.
Looks like they've been doing a little prospecting as well with the number of veteran arms that they're bringing in as non-roster invitees.
Yeah, and I don't know that any of those guys are necessarily going to impact the big league team. I think it's a lot of depth options. Their farm system is such that most of their prospects are in the lower levels, not in AA and AAA, particularly in terms of relief pitching. So I think they want to protect themselves, but at the same time, they need to fill out that AAA roster too. So there's going to be, compared to last year, certainly, a lot more of those kind of guys in the organization than we've seen in the last couple of years.
Well, it's been an interesting change that we've seen really over the last couple of seasons in the free agent process. The winter meetings are pretty slow. How much of this is on agents? How much is on owners? And do you anticipate any changes in the system going forward?
Well, as somebody who covers baseball for a living, I watch the NFL and the NBA with great envy because they seem to complete their free agency very quickly. In the case of the NBA, the players make deals before they're allowed to even sign, and then they sign right away. And it seems like it takes 72 hours for everybody to get a contract. And baseball, it drags on for 3 months, 4 months, and it just seems like needlessly. And Dombrowski talked about that at the winter meetings, that every other event in baseball, whether it's draft picks or the trade deadline during the season or arbitration-eligible players, there's a deadline that everyone adheres to and they manage to make a deal. But in the offseason, there is no deadline. And I don't know what would be a day to make it, whether it would be January 15th and then you can't sign again until April 1st or something like that. But there certainly should be a way to speed this whole process up and kind of put an end to all the posturing and agents thinking that they're going to do better. And I think if you have a deadline, human nature is such that people will make the deadline.
Well, other than the bullpen, there aren't a lot of big questions out there for Red Sox management when the team reports for spring training. Second base situation, is that going to be a situation where they try to find a veteran like a Kinsler to hold the fort? Are they happy with Nunez? What do you think might happen there?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if they were to sign a player maybe on a minor league contract or to a lesser big league contract who could play second base. But I don't even know if they need to do that because you look at, they have Eduardo Nunez, they have Brock Holt, and they have Zhuwei Lin, who they like very much. And all of those guys can play second base. So I don't know that if Pedroia was unable to play, if the physical limitations were such that he couldn't play, I think that they would be pretty well covered, whether it would be more Brock Holt or more Zhuwei Lin. Nunez isn't ideal in terms of defensively at second base. But as a hitter, he could certainly give them what they need. I don't know that they would go out and get an expensive second baseman, at least right now, because they don't know what the deal is with Pedroia. So going out and doing that now without knowing kind of where you're at, I don't know if that would make a whole lot of sense.
And they're confident, too, that Rafael Devers is the guy that we saw in postseason and not the player that struggled at times in the second half.
Yeah, Cora feels very strongly about Devers. And that he can't play third base, that they've spent a lot of time in the offseason talking to him about getting himself in better physical condition, and they feel like he's their third baseman a lot better than he was last year. They thought he put a lot of pressure on himself to kind of duplicate what he had done in his rookie year when he was so productive that he tried to hit for more power maybe than he needed to and didn't focus on the basics of it, like to not strike out as often. And Cora feels like, whether it's working with JD Martinez or working with the coaching staff, that there's a lot more in him to get. Well, you know, let's not forget, this is only a young player. So, yeah, I think they're very comfortable with him as the third baseman.
The outfield is obviously so talented, and they're all back for this year. What are the chances that there will be any discussions this season with Mookie Betts about some kind of a new contract while they have the chance, if they have the chance, to get him on any kind of a deal?
Well, there's sort of like two paths that are going on right now with Mookie Betts. One is that they need to get him signed in terms of just for next year, that he's arbitration eligible. They'd like to avoid a hearing. And by the 11th, they need to come up with a deal or the sides would exchange figures. And at that point, it would be likely that they would go to an arbitration hearing. But at the same time, as they're discussing that contract for 2019, I'm sure the Sox are saying that they're open to do something long term. Ownership came right out and said last year that Mookie Betts is a guy they want to keep and that they're going to do everything they can to keep him, which clearly makes a lot of sense. Now, Mookie, for his part, has said he feels like he wants to go year to year and get himself to free agency and see what that offers. But there will be some sort of clarification in the market once Machado and Bryce Harper sign. Betts will have a better idea of what his worth is. And at that point, maybe he and the Red Sox could sit down and have a, if not necessarily effective conversation, certainly a realistic conversation about what his value is and what the Red Sox would be willing to pay him.
We're talking with Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe. The Yankees' situation at shortstop, is that a pretty good risk for them to take with Tulowitzki?
Well, it's almost no risk because all they owe him is the major league minimum. Toronto
right.
is on the hook for the rest. So it really wouldn't cost them anything other than that. So that would seem to be as good a risk as you could possibly get, especially today. So I think they're betting on Tulowitzki being able to come back. And if he doesn't come back, Didi Gregorius is going to come back at some point during the season. So they would be, you know, at worst, waiting on their regular everyday shortstop from last year. So I for the Yankees, I think it made a lot of sense because they did need a shortstop. Tulowitzki was out there, and he's really not going to cost them any more than the major league minimum.
Have they improved themselves more than anybody else in the East?
Well, you know, they're kind of, it's interesting. A lot of Yankee fans seem to want them to go out and get Machado. I don't know that it's necessarily that they get Machado. I think they're a pretty good team without him, and they won 100 games last year. Their bullpen looks like it'll be fairly status quo, even with losing David Robertson, because they'll bring Zach Britton back. So the pitching, from a starting pitching standpoint, they've improved. I would say right now that they look like the most improved team in the East. But that's kind of a low bar because Baltimore and Toronto and Tampa Bay haven't done anything, and the Red Sox didn't really need to do anything.
Pete, what do you think will happen in a couple of weeks when we see the results of the voting for this year's Baseball Hall of Fame class?
Well, it's interesting because there's a fellow out in California who tracks the voting, the votes that are public, and he keeps track of kind of the trends, who's going what way. And it certainly looks like Edgar Martinez and Mike Mussina are making a lot of progress to the point where certainly Edgar looks like he could get elected, and it's going to be close for Mike Mussina. So that would be an interesting kind of turn of events. And the other part of it that I'm really curious to see is how much Bonds and Clemens continue to move up. And they've trended up over the last few years as the electorate gets younger and, I guess, more forgiving of what the perception is of what they did. So I think this year, I don't believe either of them will get in this year, but I think where they land in the vote this year will be interesting in terms of what their future is and whether they have a chance to get elected by the voters, because it would seem very unlikely that they would ever be elected by a veterans committee.
What about the case of Curt Schilling? It seems like he's trending up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, despite his best efforts not to, I guess. He is trending up, and I think for a lot of us, Schilling, at least for me, you could disagree with a lot of the things that he said and some of the positions that he's put forward, but that has nothing to do with baseball. And for me, I've always voted for him ever since he's been eligible. Oddly, for some reason, he contends that I haven't, which is kind of weird because the vote is on the record at the BBWA website. But Kurt tries to make it difficult on himself for whatever reason, but it seems like more writers are coming over to his side and kind of ignoring all of that secondary stuff.
Pete, away from baseball, before we let you go, I'm incredibly jealous of you. I was at the time, and then I saw the day it was released on Netflix, the Springsteen on Broadway, and man, oh man, you saw it in person. That is, I said at the time, one of the most incredible things I've ever watched on television. I can't imagine what it must have been like in person.
You know, it's funny, Rich, I've seen Springsteen a lot. I've seen a lot of different live music, and it was the first time I'd ever left the show. I don't even know if it was the show, it was a performance, because it was on Broadway. That there were people sitting in the seats who were like emotionally, overwrought at seats.
Yeah.
And they were just sitting there like almost stunned at what they had seen. And you know, that sounds pretty dramatic, and I'm sure I'm being a little goofy because I like Springsteen so much, but it really was the kind of show that stayed with you for a long time afterward. And to hear him talk as honestly as he did about his life and some of the troubles that he had and the delicate nature of, you know, failure or success and how, you know, he walked that line for a long time. It was a lot different than I think what people expected. I think they just thought it was going to be him playing his songs in a Broadway theater, and it really wasn't. And that's what made it so good. And I've spoken to a lot of people like you who didn't see the show in person but saw it on Netflix and were blown away by it.
Oh man, that soliloquy about growing up in New Jersey and what it was like in his childhood and the neighbors and the neighborhood itself.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was poetry. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and you know, I grew up in New Bedford in Massachusetts, and you know, kind of a blue collar town. And a lot of the things he talked about, I think a lot of people can relate to. I think it doesn't matter where you're from. You can identify certainly with, some kind of struggles to get where you want to get to, and it wasn't always, great. And I think everybody could, whether you like Springsteen or not, can relate to that message.
No question about that. Pete Abraham covers the Red Sox for the Boston Globe and has exquisite taste in music. Pete, as always, great talk with you. Thanks for making time for us today.
Thank you for having me on, Rich. I appreciate it.